done this in a while.
Blog Talk Radio.
Why Paul Anka came and sang, but okay, why not?
Somebody it's a great song.
It's a great song. I know my mother used to love it, and I love Paul Anka, but I guess it's my destiny to have a strange day today. Well, everybody, this is Fran Lewis, and I'm back from taking time off this summer, and this is the new season of Book Discussion on the World of Ink, the only network on Blog Talk that you really need to listen to. We've got so many great shows and so many great authors and so many great hosts that I'll just name one or two or three. And remember, we've got Marcia Casper Cook and A Good Story is a Good Story that you want to listen to on Tuesday nights at 9, but you know, it's a great show. And Virginia Grenier and Writing Mamas, and we've got Bennett Pomerantz, and we've got a whole bunch of other people on the World of Ink. So that's really the only network you need, because it's the one that has it all, the great hosts, the great things that you need to know, and premier promotions. I just went in MJ Magazine, Michigan Avenue Media, Marcia Casper Cook, and Fran Lewis. Now I've just started premier promotions. We should promote with us and promote the right way. Online interviews, cover reveals, book reveals, and more. Call 847-441-4271. We are so there. And right now I would like to introduce my guest. This book was so unbelievably compelling. It was scary too. The character of Jaspar in the book is Jasper's War is an absolute amazing book about a character, a young woman whose two children get kidnapped, and to what lengths she will go through in order to get her children back. And the author is here, Sim Lowe. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Fran, and you?
Okay. getting back into the groove here. But before we start, what really took me when I got this book, by the way, publicist Carol sent it, and it was one of those books that came in the mail that I didn't expect, which is always a good thing. I never know what I'm going to get, and I never know what the post is going to bring. And your book has a specific point, and it deals with Operation Next Chapter. So can you explain that to everybody?
Well, sure. All the proceeds from this book go to Operation Next Chapter, which is a undertaking we have created to acquire voice-activated computers for veterans who come back from combat and have lost the ability to use their hands. Oftentimes, the hands have been destroyed or burned, or sometimes it's simply mental injuries like PTSD that will not allow the brain to communicate with the hands. And we discovered that there are about 200 of our veterans, heroes, who are on a waiting list for these computers. And a group in San Antonio, Texas, by the name of Soldiers Angels, started this program to raise money to buy the hardware. So, Fran, if you came back from Iraq or Syria or wherever else we're fighting, mm-hmm. and you couldn't use your hands, the Defense Department assesses you and provides the software so that you can have a voice-activated computer, but does not provide the hardware. That all has to come from private sources, and there are 200 people on that waiting list. And so far from Jasper's War, we've raised enough money to pay for 30 computers, and they tend to be expensive computers because they require so much capacity in order to do the voice activation.
So what is the link that if anybody, I don't have the link, if somebody emails it to me, I can put it out there, plus the information that Carol sent me about Operation Next Chapter and the Soldiers Angels, because there are a lot of veterans out there, and I hope they're listening, because I did put this out for everyone to hear.
Cool.
Tell everybody.
Yeah, there's two places they could go. They could go to my website, which is SimLowell.com, or to Soldiers Angels, SoldiersAngels.org. And both places, there are links to make those contributions online, or, of course, I'd be happy for people to buy a lot of books, but in any event, all the proceeds, 100% of the proceeds, go to this program.
That is so amazing. That is great. It really is great. And a lot of these people would not have these computers or anything or know about them unless you did this. So tell everybody, Jasper's War sort of takes place in a small town, and she's at a picnic or she's at an event with her children, and they go missing. How did you decide to create this particular young mother and the situations that she encounters, which most people would not be able to encounter and deal with?
Well, all the characters and the stories I like to write come from experiences I've had during my lifetime. And I succeeded in flunking out of high school just in time to go to the Navy and Vietnam, which taught me an awful lot. So I tend to enjoy dealing with characters who are placed in impossible positions and have to make a transformation. And then I enjoy just trying to play with and understand the emotions of those characters. And I think in my life, and Fran, I'm sure in your life too, we all have to make transformations sometimes. And in a novel or in a movie, we just need it to be stark and compelling to want to understand both the story, what's going on, as well as understanding the character, and hopefully readers then just keep turning the pages because they're intrigued both with the plot and the characters and the transformation that is having to be made. And in this case, as you said, Jasper is a rich socialite in Greenwich, Connecticut, probably not a very sympathetic character, and her husband is Secretary of the U.S. Treasury and a former Wall Street baron. He's discovered that he thinks there's a fraud in one of the bailout projects of 10 years ago, let's say, and he's on his way back from London to explain what he thinks is going on to his wife, whose opinion he respects. FBI comes and tells her that her husband's plane crashed into the Arctic and there's no chance of his recovery. And at the same time, her children are kidnapped. And then she gets a text from his phone, and he's supposed to be at the bottom of the Arctic Ocean, that says, in essence, that if you say anything about what your husband is coming home for, your children will become shark food like he is. So she has to decide, she has to decide whether she's going to sit there and let her children be killed because she knows, in essence, what's going to happen, or does she have to transform herself somehow to find those children? She talks to the priest, and the priest connects her to the kind of person we served with in Vietnam, Australian Aborigine half-breeds who were taken at birth and transformed into fighters to go down into the tunnels of that era. And I always wondered what would happen to those youngsters when they become adults. Could they ever become human beings? So the essence of this story is that we have a woman who has to become a warrior, and we have a warrior who desires to become a human being, and they work together to try to recover Jasper's children.
I have that last line here that says, if what he believed becomes public, your children will also become ocean, you know what, and your silence is their only path to life. And she meets this priest. And what part does he play to help her to get started?
The priest has been in Jasper's life, has been in her life forever. Her father actually was in the outback working in an outreach project, and the priest was there as well, and then the priest went to Notre Dame, and Jasper also went to Notre Dame where she met her husband. And the priest has simply been in her life forever, and he is the person that Jasper turned to because her father had just died.
Well, she's at this this baseball game, and she's telling her children to go to the picnic tables. And how does she feel at that particular moment when she realizes they're gone? And yet she handles it in such a way that most people would panic, and she just handled it.
Well, she froze up like most people do at the time, and then over a period of 2 or 3 days, as the government officials come to her for various purposes trying to figure out what's going on, she decides that I can't sit here and just wait for my children to die, and the government doesn't know what to do, and they're not going to help me, so I have to help myself. So she turned to the only person she knew how to turn to, and he knew in what direction she could go, because he knew the character's name is Nulandi, the former child terrorist, and he was also aware that Nulandi was trying to figure out how to transform himself from being a heartless killer into a human being.
And what was the relationship with Chief Bearstrike? And he explains his connections to Jaspar also, and why they needed his help, and Will Jason to understand what was going on. What documents did they have to look at in order to find out anything that the husband was trying to do?
Well, those are the other principal characters in the story, aside from the bad guys. And just before Jasper's husband departed for London, he left her a memory stick on which he had put a lot of documents and had put his beliefs and his thoughts in a way that she had taught him how to study when they were at Notre Dame together, so that nobody else could read it and understand it. When she discovered what was in there and decided that she had to leave, she gave that memory stick to a friend who worked for a Warren Buffett-type world-class financial expert, although in this case the character is Chief Westbrook Bearstrike, who happens to be the chief of the Cherokee Nation, and he's assembled an empire like Berkshire Hathaway. I was always fascinated with American Indians and what they could do, so I just made him the financial expert here, who, while Jasper's off doing what she's doing with Nulandi, then Chief Bearstrike can work with the government because he's able, through the documents on the memory stick, to understand what's going on. And the stimulus program that the government has been undertaking, if it is completed in the final step, the money would all be going to the bad guys.
And they didn't want They didn't want that stimulus plan to take place.
Correct.
Right, they didn't.
So that meant somebody had to deal with the White House and the politicians and explain to them that this is all part of a massive fraud that the government has been drawn into.
That's scary, and I wonder if that really happens today, probably. You wonder how much of what you write in fiction is really nonfiction at times also.
Well, of course, I think fiction writers get their ideas out of reality, and today in the newspaper this morning it says that Bank of America is going to pay some $20 billion because of losses to the government through the financial collapse in 2008 and thereafter. That stimulus program, I always thought the money went to the bad guys as well. Bad guys might be financial institutions or foreign financial institutions, but in the book, of course, the bad guys are really bad guys who want to destroy the economic system of the West.
That was the interesting part about it, and it was hanging right in front of them, and they didn't even see it.
Right.
So one of my favorite characters in the book was Alice. Tell everybody about Alice.
Well, Alice is a dog, an Australian dingo dog, and Alice comes from my experience in Vietnam a long, long time ago in 1964 to 1966. And in the kinds of boats we were doing on rivers and related areas, it seems like we always had dogs with us. And I was always just fascinated to watch the fearless instincts of dogs who love the men and women they're working with in terms of just being able to point ways forward or sense things that no amount of electronic equipment could do. So our character Nulandi has always had a dog named Alice because he was born in the area of Alice Springs in the outback, and Alice is the third of his dogs named Alice, and in Jasper's War, Alice plays a very important role because she is the third warrior that is on this track. There's Nulandi, there's Jasper, and there's a dog, and at one point towards the end of the story, the American president, in essence, says that the chief bear strike, that you mean that the only thing is between us and global financial collapse is a former half-breed commando, a socialite, and a dog.
So who is Jason? And what is
Jason
he,
was the...
He's a good character, too.
Yeah, Jason was the U.S. attorney and... Manhattan, who's responsible for investigating financial crimes. So he starts out trying to deal with Jasper, thinking that her husband, the Secretary of the Treasury, is somehow himself involved in a fraud. Mm. So he ends up investigating, and ultimately he goes to talk to Chief Bearstrike, thinking that Chief Bearstrike could help him understand what was going on. And Chief Bearstrike lives off in the middle of Oklahoma in primitive conditions. And the U.S. attorney goes there for a few days, and Bearstrike then takes the time to explain to Jason, the U.S. attorney, exactly what's going on so that he understands, and then he also helps to get things fixed in Washington.
Yeah, I know. That's, like, interesting. So what was, for those people that don't understand, could you explain to them what a stimulus plan is and what exactly Trevor was trying to do?
Well, a stimulus plan, it happens every few years in the government, and after the financial collapse in 2008, there were three rounds of financial stimulus, and President Obama did the third round. And it's simply efforts of pumping money back into the economy. Mm. You recall that in 2008, the so-called mortgage and real estate boom collapsed, and the stimulus payments were intended to put capital back into the financial institutions that had made the loans to get the economy going again. And in this story, I just took that idea of stimulus payments. And as I thought about it, I wondered at the time, what if these trillions of dollars are actually being spent in ways that they reward the bad guys who almost destroyed the system to start with? So that's where the idea came from. And every day in the newspaper, we read about the Federal Reserve and interest rates and other things. So efforts to stimulate the economy are always there in every country. And this was just a background for the story of Jasper. And Jasper's husband had discovered that this range of stimulus payments had actually been structured in a way that unintentionally was benefiting the bad guys, and he was trying to blow the whistle. He was coming home to blow the whistle on it to try to stop that final payment.
So when you wrote this, because this is a sort of like a writing question that people don't know. When you wrote this, did you write it out as far as this particular area, the stimulus plan, the plot, whatever, or did you create Jasper first and let her fit into the plot?
In this case, I started with the financial stimulus plan because I always thought that it stunk for some reason I couldn't figure out. And I'd written an earlier book, and the characters of Bearstrike and Nulandi were in it. So I just started out trying to figure if I want to write about what I think is involved in this kind of stimulus structure and make a thriller out of it, what kind of characters would be most interesting? And in all of the books that I write, typically the protagonist is a female, told in the first person so that we're experiencing the emotion she actually had as the story evolves. So at the time, when I wrote that story, I was spending a ton of time in New York and happened to have a friend, and I spent a lot of time in Greenwich. So that's I just started off with I actually met a woman once upon a time who said, okay, so this woman could be a good character in a book. So that's where Jasper actually came from.
That's amazing, because usually it's somebody you know or somebody that you want to know, or an incident that actually happened. But she changes.
Absolutely.
She changes throughout the story. The beginning, she's just this rich lady, and then she becomes stronger, and at the end, well, I'm not going to tell everybody at the end, something else happens. How did you create the different faces of Jasper? I mean, she's like a whole other person, that if you look at her, I don't mean physical appearance, if you know the way she was acting, her whole personality at the beginning, the middle, she changes to a whole other person, and she's not who she is. How did you create that?
Well, she is a thoughtful, intelligent, sensitive woman. Her husband's been murdered.
Yeah.
Her children have been kidnapped, and she knows if she doesn't do something, they're going to be killed, as her husband was. She's willing to do anything to transform herself to be what she has to be. And think about it in terms of every man and woman who goes into the military and is trained for combat,
yeah,
whether it's a SEAL or anything else, they have to transform themselves from high school student or college student into somebody who could kill or maim or do anything else that's required to complete a mission. And that's exactly what Jasper had to do, of deciding, I'm going to transform myself and I will do anything to get from here to the next step to try to find and save my children. And someday, if I can save them, or even if I can't save them, I'm going to have to come to grips with what I'm doing right now. But in the throw of battle, you have no choice. You either succeed or don't succeed, and then when the mission is over, then you can sit down and moralize about what you've done. And frankly, the soldiers who are injured, and we try to buy computers for them in our Operation Next Chapter, they suffer many of the same things through the PTSD and otherwise that Jasper could have to deal with because of all the things she does in this story.
That's true. So what happens to her? What is her relationship with Nulandi? Because it started out one way, and then it sort of changes throughout the story.
Well, to make any kind of story interesting, I think you have to have a fascinating plot line, and you have to have fascinating characters, and you need to have the characters interact with each other. And if there's some potential romance or threat of romance or a question in a reader's mind, such as how could a socialite from Greenwich, Connecticut, have any kind of interest in a warrior and commando who spent his whole life killing people? Good question. And
it is interesting, right?
Well, that's right. But if you think about it, Fran, and each of our listeners, each of us in life gets paired up with other people, and we form relationships for reasons that make no sense except in the context in which we come in contact, we develop an interpersonal relationship, and sometimes people who are enemies or opposites become great friends.
Sometimes
they even have a romantic relationship.
Well, sometimes they've said that even prisoners, you know, can get people to think that they're romantic characters. I think there was something on the news the other day with this young girl that wants to marry Charles Manson. Has she lost her mind completely?
Right.
I mean, to find somebody like that, that's sadistical and crazy, romantic, okay. You know, there are a lot of people that find these bad characters, like somebody that their own Sir Galahad, maybe they think they're going to take care of them. I doubt that. So this was an interesting story. How would you define the title of Jasper's War? It has a lot of different connotations.
Well, the title came from working with my editors and publicists and whatnot of what should the title of this book be. And we tried lots of different titles. And the name, the title of the book actually just came from a discussion in which I listened to lots of different suggestions and ended up saying, the book is about the war that Jasper has to fight to get her children back. So let's just keep it simple. Let's call it Jasper's War. And that's not a, it's an interesting contrast, I think, to have a book that has the word war in it and is told from the standpoint of the female protagonist in the story. And it's not a, a typical or prototypical feminist kind of book, I don't suppose.
No, it's not.
Although that's frankly the way I feel about it. I just thought it was a war. She had to go to war and she had to fight a war, and maybe it's just the former military person to me saying that's what it is, it's a war.
Well, we meet Chrissy and we meet her son, and so in little squirts, snippets in the story, and yet you seem to think that maybe they have something like their mother has also. Because they don't give up on themselves either.
That's right. I mean, we have, in this story, the two children are actually kidnapped. Yeah. And from a writer's standpoint, you can leave those two characters, a boy age 12 and a girl age 10, and you can leave them off to the side of the story and never involve them. But I wanted the readers to know that they are alive. And they're trying in their own way to get free, but there's not much they can do under those circumstances. But as Jasper goes through what she has to go through, I think it's important from a plot standpoint that the readers can at least get a glimpse of who the prisoners are, and that they are alive, and also get a glimpse of who the bad guys are. So we have a bad guy in this story, and his name is Prince Alsjar, and he works for dastardly people, lives in splendor in Monte Carlo and in Provence in France, and is a race car driver, and he Grand Prix driver. He actually has a whole persona of being a famous Grand Prix driver who's aloof and distant, but in actuality, he's the person who's directing everything that's going on, trying to destroy the Western financial system.
And we're not
so we
tell
get to see a little bit of him
yet.
in his splendor, and I hope that as readers read along with that, they wonder, well, how could such a person be such a dastardly character in the story?
Well, that's what makes the story so interesting, and then he's right in plain sight, and people don't see it. Well, it's all too
right.
Often the bad guy is right there, and there are a few other bad guys that are right there that nobody realizes, and nobody realizes who's really behind what happened to Trevor either. I'm going to tell them. So what do you think, what lesson can readers learn? What can people learn from about Jasper? What lessons can be learned in this story? And what would Jasper say she learned about herself?
Oh, I think what Jasper would say about herself was, I had an indomitable desire to get my children back.
Yeah, she
did. And I had faith that if I could simply find someone to help me, I could transform myself one step at a time into finding my children. And to me, that lesson, that was what I learned in the Navy when I was 18, 19, 20 years old, and enabled me to be whatever I've become of don't give up, take one step at a time, deal with whatever comes up, and then just move on. And I think if Jasper were talking to you today, Fran, and you were asking her about her journey, she would just shrug her shoulders and say, I did what I had to do. And Fran, you would have done the same thing under those circumstances.
Well, you do when it comes to overcoming obstacles. Yes, you certainly do. I know, I did that.
And each of us does that every day in our own lives in terms of whatever the issue is. If if I'm somebody tells me that I have cancer, and I don't like the prognosis, of course, but once I get over the shock of it, then okay, so I have this condition now. What do I have to do to get over it? And the same thing, you take one step at a time, and hopefully you succeed, and you can look back and say, well, I learned that I can be deathly ill and overcome it.
I haven't, can I identify not with that, but I do understand, because I was told last week that I had surgery in October, and I lost the feeling in the left side of my face because of someone else's mistake, not mine. And unfortunately, I was told that the feeling in the left side of my face is not going to come back ever. And you're right, you have to overcome it. And my, you know, I have a sense of humor, a great sense of humor. I had something in my jaw. The dentist, oh, yeah, he omitted telling me this for 12 years. He didn't know. Like, he didn't know it was there. I had the thing removed. I had a whole bunch of stuff done. And as a result, I'm left with this thing on the left side of my jaw. I feel like somebody's sitting on my face. Sometimes it affects my speech. And, oh, yeah, at my ripe old age of 109, whatever that is, I get to wear braces, which I find hilarious. And tomorrow I get to go to a nerve doctor, of all things nerves. Yeah, just so that he could tell me what four other people said, guess what, you're not getting the feeling back in your face. And my joke is, yeah, well, I got the other side, so don't worry about it. You're right. You learn to sort of temper it, you think about it, and then when I thought about it, I said, okay, it was this 8-centimeter thing that was in my jaw, and fortunately, it wasn't anything bad. So they were able to take it out and a whole bunch of other things that I would have liked to have kept instead, but oh well, just think I got braces in the long run to make my teeth straight at this old age of whatever. So you're right.
Well, I'm sorry you've had that, but it beat heck out of something even worse than that, I think.
I try not to get too upset. And they said, well, you know, you're not going to get the feeling back in your jaw. I go, well, what can I say? At least one side is working and the other side, you can't tell. If you look at me, you can't tell, which is great. So when you saw me, you couldn't tell, which is good.
Well, and when I met you, we were at a cocktail party and we were both having a very good time.
We were, that's right, and I was glad you came up to me. That probably was great. That Thriller Fest was probably one of the best days of my life. When Larry Thompson invited me, and hint, hint, I want to be invited next year again, people, it was amazing to meet you, to meet Steve Berry, John Lesquart, to meet all these people whose books I reviewed, and to actually have them turn around and say, I know the voice, and they knew who I was. That made it even better. I just want them to look at me and go and say, oh, my God, that's her. which is really great.
Let me take you back for a second for the question about overcoming adversity. If readers go to either my website or the soldiersangels.org website, there's lots of pictures of heroes we've awarded these computers to, and their stories sometimes are beyond comprehension. One in particular is a young man who came back and he had a horrible PTSD. He had a computer, and until he had the computer, his wife had to be with him 24 hours a day for fear that he might kill himself if she were away. It took about 18 months till he received a computer. And then once he had it, he could connect online, he could finish school, and he could go on in his life. And I know there's pictures of a Captain Tok in New York, so Vietnamese, but grew up in Queens and put himself through college and law school, and right after 9/11, he could either become an Army lawyer or he could become a combat officer, and he wanted to become a combat officer and serve 3 tours in Iraq and Afghanistan and then got blown up in the 3rd tour. He always has a seeing eye dog with him, and he has to have one or two men or women go with him any place he goes, and he can't really bend over because he has so much shrapnel in his back,
boy.
And they couldn't remove it without, in essence, severing his spinal cord. And he today is just, I'm with him. We make presentations frequently. He's just a wonderful transformation of somebody who's faced some of the worst things possible. And his mission in life now is suicide prevention, both for veterans who come home and become depressed and also for their spouses. And I've learned through this process that oftentimes the suicide risk is with the spouse, male or female, trying to deal with the emotional and physical wounds of their husband or wife.
They don't provide enough help for people when they come back, do they? They don't provide the support, do they, the mental help and the people to talk to them that have post-traumatic stress disorder?
Well, I think so. I have friends and relatives who've served in this war or other wars. The injuries are just devastating. And I think the government provides the care and the opportunity for care. It's just way more difficult, I think, than anybody can imagine getting over it. I don't think it's any different than any other kind of trauma. But for all the criticism and press about VA hospitals and everything, as far as I can see, based on what I do, I think there's an awful lot of care and support and love provided to our heroes.
That is good to know. My nephew just came back from the second tour in Afghanistan. And yeah, he did. He just came back. He was a point man. Brave.
Terrible job.
Yeah, no, it's awful. He said I think he counted every second until he just got back in 2 weeks ago. You know, and I just hope he volunteered to go in the second time. Volunteered. That I couldn't understand why he came back a little off a wall the first time, that he would want to go back a second time, and he did. So how many women or men would actually risk their lives for their children? And what are some of the places that she went to in order to survive?
Well, I think that any parent worthy of being a parent would do anything to save their children from extremists. I frankly can't imagine anybody who wouldn't make any sacrifice, personal, financial, or otherwise, whether it's giving up a kidney or even two kidneys to save children who are in distress. I just can't imagine that. And in Jasper's case, she has to do a whole range of things, not all violent, in order to get from one step to the other. And in the path of the story, it starts out in New York, but quickly goes to Australia, and then the actual stories involves lovely places in Tuscany of Italy, where I've been many times, and all these locations. I'm lucky enough to be able to describe them from having been there many times in my life, and ends up, of all places, at the Monte Carlo Grand Prix.
I would love to have, I don't know if they would do it though, the stories that you're telling me about, MJ Magazine is coming out, the fifth edition of my magazine is coming out at the end of September. And the theme of this magazine happens to be overcoming adversities and overcoming adversities in your life and overcoming challenges. So I am going to feature the review for this book, for Jasper's War. In my magazine. I have a couple of books of children's stories by Brad Meltzer that he did. Ordinary Heroes Do Ordinary Things, and he talks about Albert Einstein, Rosa Parks, and Amelia Earhart. And he does it in children's books. They're excellent. But Jasper's War is great, and if you want to share some of those stories or write an article for the magazine, that would be really great, too, because the theme of it is, like I said, overcoming obstacles and adversities in your life. And one of the things that is going to be featured is my mom had Alzheimer's, and she lived with it for 10 years, and I don't know how she did. She overcame a lot, went through a lot. And the doctor that created the research fund for her at Montefiore Hospital sent me 10 articles that I could use in the magazine. So that's going to be another thing. And also, Nelson Mandela overcame a lot, being in prison for 27 years, and the Nelson Mandela Memory Center gave me permission to use their information, too.
Wow, so that's great.
It's going to be a big issue, so if you want to contribute, that would be even better. And I could
Love to, and one of the things I've done a lot of in the last few months is making presentations to at-risk young people, and I've got a set of slides I'll be happy to send to you that, in essence, saying that if somebody like me can make something out of his life coming from where I did in my youth, then anybody can. And I've simply made a little slideshow out of all that, focusing on overcoming adversity with dreams, just having a dream and having a path, mm-hmm. and having the patience go about it. So I'd love to do that.
That would be great. That would be great. And this is the first of the next. There's another next book coming, right? Because this book ends in a very, we won't tell people, in a very unusual way.
Yeah, there's actually the next book to come out will be a prequel to this. It's where the original story of where Nulandi and Chief Bearstrike came from, not Jasper, but Nulandi, the half-breed Aborigine, and Chief Bearstrike, the financial genius. And the name of that book is, as of right now, it's called Harvest of Gold. And the backstory is, at the end of World War II, there was even then billions of dollars of wealth that disappeared from, was never accounted for, of wealth that was taken from Jewish and other people during the Holocaust. So I was always intrigued with that. So that's a background of that story. And in essence, it's a thriller, and it takes place in Texas and Washington, D.C., but a different group of characters. But it's the in the as the year 2000 approaches, there's a trust that would mature, and the bad guys of the world are trying to get rid of any potential beneficiaries of that trust.
So is that going to be a final second, or is there going to be a third?
Well, there's also a third in process.
How did I know that?
Editors have the Harvest of Gold, and they're working on that now, and I'm working on a sequel, and the sequel involves all these same characters in a slightly different setting, and that is it's the same ultimate bad guys as in Jasper's mm-hmm. War. And the bad guys believe that Europe is falling apart. America is not willing to be a leader in the world. It's a great opportunity to just allow events in Europe to occur as they are and make Germany think that Russia's attacking it and making Russia think Germany's attacking it and try to foment them coming together in the context of war that would serve the interests of the bad guys, because then they could become the leaders of that modern-day Prussian government.
I just wonder,
and not surprisingly, Chief Bearstrike and Nulandi and Jasper all play a critical element in saving the world.
Well, there's somebody else that's going to play a critical part, and I can't wait to see what you're going to do with that, but we won't say who that is.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. Marcia Casper Cook is the World of Ink. She is the reason I'm here. She's part of the World of Ink. She is the person that started it with Virginia Grenier. What she's going to do, because she just texted me on here, is that she's going to feature Jasper's War. I'm going to send it to her, the review, in for Michigan Avenue Media. And I know I just said we started a promotions company, but oh, what the heck. We're going to do this anyway. She's going to do a cover reveal, and the cover reveal will be on our radio show so everybody can see the cover of the book and get to know Jasper's War, and maybe they'll do some, some donations, and I'm going to send her the links for your charity so that people can donate and buy the book. And those people that haven't bought this book, I don't know where you are. This is one of the best books I was ever surprised to get. Seriously. And how else do you work with veterans? What else do you do to work with the veterans? Because it's so important that people know, and it's so important that people understand that when they come back that they really need the support and love of their family.
Well, when this Operation Next Chapter is the main thing, but I work with this group called Soldiers Angels in San Antonio, Texas, and it's a group of 5 paid staff members and 20,000 volunteers.
Wow.
And during the Afghan and Iraq wars, the group of volunteers would provide bags of whatever the male or female warriors wanted, so they received a gift from home every 2 weeks, in addition to whatever their families or loved ones happened to send. And Soldiers Angels has a whole variety of different kinds of programs. And when we ward computers, we always, I mean, it's not we, I'm just doing what they ask me to do in terms of going to veterans hospitals or making presentations or presentations to young people, encouraging them the benefits of military service. So it's a whole wide range of things, all intend to do the same thing, try to give back to other people everything that was given to me by the Navy during my time of service when I was 18, 19, 20 years old.
So
it's a joy to me to be able to find some way of giving back and repaying some of that opportunity that was given to me.
That is great. That's probably why I love reviewing books and working with authors, because my real field is being a reading and writing staff developer and working with kids with learning disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what got me. Yeah, well, I do. I help my nieces and nephews when they need support, and I help my nephew when he's in college and calls me at 2:00 in the morning and says he needs some help. Seriously, yeah. And I love reading children's books, and I love helping children's authors, especially when they have a message. You know, in a message involved to help kids with different kinds of learning problems in school. Because I don't think everybody realizes that not everybody, you know, I did some on autism, Asperger's, and cerebral palsy and a whole bunch of other illnesses that children have to learn to get along with other kids in school. So working with the veterans, this is amazing. Where can our readers and listeners learn more about you and your other titles?
They can just go to my website. It's cymlowell.com, cymlowell.com.
And we're
Fran,
going
I was
to...
going to say, you and I have a lot in common in this prequel book I mentioned, Harvest of Gold. The protagonist is a school teacher in a small Texas town who uses funding to teach children via video games how to think and how to learn. It's called Project Even Start. So her dream is that everybody has an even place to begin in life. So you will like that character.
Well, make sure I get that character. I get some really exciting books. And when I got Jasper's War, I was like, okay, who sent this to me? And I forgot, MLB is your publishing company, your publicist. They just send everything. And they don't ask me. They just automatically just send it.
They just send
it. Seriously. They just send it. Carol sends me. She sent me something else last week that I is on my to-read list, and I will definitely read it, about a Russian woman and another woman that was very sick and how she wound up getting her some real help. It's nonfiction. Sometimes they send me stuff that's interesting, and sometimes they send me stuff like your book that gave me eye strain because I read it in one day.
Wow.
You know, once you start reading Jasper's War, and it's graphic, people, and you've got to really, you know, read it and look past some of the scenes, you're not going to want to put it down until you find out what happens at the end. And then at the end, you're going to go like, okay, where's the next book? No, seriously, you are. So I want to thank you a million times.
Thank you for reading it, and thank you for enjoying it, and thank you for all your beautiful words.
You're very, very welcome. And we're going to feature this on the World of Ink. Michigan Avenue Media is going to put it on their website. I'm going to put it out again on my review site. I have a review site on Facebook. I don't know. Do you have a Facebook thing?
I do, but my daughter-in-law handles all that social media things, and I love going on there, but I never think of doing it. But I do know how to do it.
I figured out how to do it because I had no choice but to figure out how to do it. But I have a site. It's called Reviewing Your Book. And it's for people that want to join the site to get their books reviewed. For those people out there, don't put your downloads on there. And your 99-cent thing, that's not what it's for. I delete them. It's for people that request reviews and want reviews for books. So before I forget, next Thursday, this is going to be, it's like, you know, the government must be the topic for the month. David H. Brown was a former public information officer for the government. And David H. Brown wrote, Air Force One has vanished. What happens when the President of the United States purposely decides to take the plane off the radar? who is in control, and watch what happens when the Senate and the House and everyone fight for control. This was interesting. So he's coming on next week, the week after.
That's fascinating. I get
strange things. I get fascinating books. You never know. And on September 11th, Steve Shurkus's debut novel, Poisoned, is very, 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 it was a tearjerker. Hermann Bilkes was a German fortune teller, soothsayer, they said, and he was accused of poisoning 6 people in the Vizrael family. After you read the book, you decide who the real killer is, and you decide if he was wrongly accused. With the pictures, it's a true story. And I couldn't resist not talking to the author because, oh, my God, I'm trying to figure out why he decided to write about a murder that took place in 1906, 1907. And this poor man and what happened to him. Okay, and Chat Time begins on September 17th with forensic psychiatrist Mark Rubenstein. What happened to Rowdy and Danny when somebody finds out what they really did and come after them? And the day after, the case of the purloined painting by Carl Brookins. And that's just to start, which you come on October 2nd when I have, Tom Sawyer, the head writer of Murder, She Wrote, and his book, Course Purposes, Meet Barney Moon. He's hilarious. So that's just some of what's coming up this girl is starting to do. And, Sim, I'm looking forward to having you on again. That would be really great. The new show is called...
Anytime, and I'll be in touch to find out what you need for the MJ Magazine.
Okay, please do. Just let me know. It's like by the end of September, any kind of article on overcoming obstacles. You could even tell us what you do to work with veterans. That would be great.
Absolutely. I could
Thank
do two
you.
Articles. Here's what I do, and then sort of hopefully an inspirational thing of we all have to and do overcome obstacles and adversities, mm-hmm. or we simply die.
That would be great. That would be fantastic. Thank you so much.
I always thought the essence of what Martin Luther King had to say was, you dream to live, and if you don't have a dream, you die.
Martin Luther King was a very powerful character, powerful man. And when I was in college, I graduated college, I was really very young. And one of the professors that was doing a mass media class I was taking invited us to come watch King being filmed.
Oh, wow.
That was exciting. Yeah, that was exciting. We were a bunch of little young kids that got to go see this unbelievable man. And then the week after he took us, because he was in the Bronx somewhere on Fordham Road, got to see Kennedy from very far away.
Wow.
So that was like, oh, my God, yeah. So I want to thank you so very much. And for those people, I will be back next Thursday at 4 with David H. Brown. And everyone, have a great day, and I'm looking forward to your articles, and I will email you what I need.
Sounds good. Thank you, Fran. Thank you for inviting me in any time. I'm happy to do anything you need me to do.
Thank you so much, and everybody have a great day, and bye.
Bye-bye.